Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Bogger Milas, still getting used to saying my name like that, but I am still the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as always, is my co-host and partner in crime, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
It is very early. We're recording this at a slightly, like, not what we normally record, and so if I sound a little out of it, it's because it's very early for me, and I don't like it, and that's where I'm at. But in better news, we have, at least you guys won't have to listen to me complain by myself the whole time. We have a guest with us this week. It is our first ever Televisions contributor, Carmen Grogan.
Good morning.
Good morning. You sound incredibly perky.
I'm just pretending.
We have a morning person among us.
I'm known for my bubbliness.
Okay.
Surprise, I am not. But I think, like, if you've made it that far into listening to the show, you probably knew that already.
So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about, I'm actually really excited to talk about this because we haven't talked about the show yet on the pod. And we couldn't figure out how to work it in before now. So we're just going to do sort of a big wrap up and look back and discussion of The Great British Baking Show.
Yay!
I know this is like Annie's favorite show. Or The Great British Bake Off, depending on like what side of the pond you're talking about. I don't know.
We are ruled by Pillsbury here. So for us, it has to be The Great British Baking Show.
Is that really the reason?
Yes, that is really the reason.
That's so dumb.
Yep. They have the copyright or the trademark. That's the way it is. And so they had to change the name when they brought it across the pond.
Pillsbury, I love your crescent rolls, but this is disappointing. Because do you know how hard it is to like talk about this show on social media? Because I don't know how I'm supposed to hashtag it. So I just hashtag it with everything.
I hashtag it GBBO.
Oh, me too.
That is the accepted hashtag. The fact that it doesn't technically match what we have over here doesn't matter. It's the hashtag. So yeah.
I just use multiple. Sorry for everyone. Anyway, this is technically, I guess, for America, it's season 8, and I don't even, Annie, just you did like a whole explainer on the show and what season we're on. So go.
Okay, so The Great British Baking Show actually started as The Great British Bake Off in 2010 on BBC One, on BBC Two. It was a fundraiser show when it first started. It was actually nothing like the show we see now. Sue and Mel were the hosts. Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry were the original judges. Mary Berry was basically, she's sort of, she's not quite the Julia Child of the BBC, but it's easiest to think of her that way. Like, she's multiple shows on BBC Two where she does cooking classes. And Paul Hollywood was sort of the a semi-famous baker who they paired with her as a personality for her to play off of.
Is he though?
So Sue and Mel were known for their show, the Supersizers Go, where they did food history. So they were hired as sort of they were the host, but they were also food historians. And the original first 6-episode season was as much about the history of British baking as it was a reality competition show.
Oh, that's so interesting. Remember we used to do when it was on PBS. We used to do I think you must have been you. You did a series about like food history as it relates to the Bake Off.
That's correct. And if you, if PBS viewers will remember that at the end of every episode, there was always a little history component that played at the very end of the episode. That was actually edited out of the center of the episode. In the original episodes, as they played overseas, that would actually be something that would play between, say, the technical and the showstopper, as the contestants are making their signature bake. And the original was actually about, you would have several of those throughout the episode where Sue would, you know, it wasn't just, one of the other things is, you know, nobody ever asks why are they in a tent. They were in a tent because that very first season, that tent moved from city to city every week. So it wasn't just bread week. It was bread week being held in a city that had been making bread since Roman times. And while the contestants made their bread signature, Sue would go off while Mel wandered around the tent, and she would interview someone who worked at a bakery that had literally been standing since 900 AD. And
I kind of love that.
Right? And that was what the show originally was. And then it was super popular. So what they decided to do was try to turn it into an actual show. So the first thing they did was remove the whole charity aspect, where Mel used to turn to the camera and say, and if you want to put on a bake-off to raise money in your community, yeah, that all got cut. They cut the male voiceover and started letting Sue and Mel do the voiceovers. Season two was still very much amateurs, and that's why neither season one nor season two has ever aired here in the States. And it's partly because the show is not the show that we know now. It's sort of the show morphing into that show. By season three, it had sort of become that show, but it also had some what we would call questionable theme weeks, like American Pie, which was it would you PBS viewers will remember season three being aired here on PBS as season five, and they will remember the American Pie challenge and how terrible that was. Season three was never supposed to air over here. That only happened because PBS lost the Great British Baking Show when it moved from the BBC to Channel 4, and Netflix got the rights to air it over here. So we've had 9 out of 11 seasons air over here, but we never had them air in order, and they still aren't in order on Netflix. If you watch Netflix, season 1 is their season 5, season 2 is their season 4. Because PBS basically started airing it with season 5, discovered how popular it was, but because BBC only did it once a year, there was no new season to come yet, so they got season 4 as the second season, and then went to a once a year schedule. So season 3 is season 2, season 4 is season 7, and then the show moved from the BBC One to Channel 4. And that's when Netflix took over. So Netflix aired season 8 as season 5, while PBS went and got season 3 and also aired it as season 5. And it is now on Netflix as Great British Baking Show, The Beginnings, season 1. Yeah, I know.
I would like you to know that my head hurts.
This
now.
Is more confusing than like the Star Wars thing ridiculous. Where it's like, is it number 4 or is it number 1?
It is ridiculous the way that the way that the show has sort of been not butchered in the way that like sci-fi butchered like Doctor Who in those first years when it brought it over during the reboot. Like it didn't cut out like anything important in that way, but it was still like the way that we know it and the way that it is across the pond is confusing for a very good reason. It's because it kind of came over in this piecemeal right. way. Like PBS never expected it to be the massive hit that it was when it started bringing it mm-hmm. over. The fact of the matter is that reality shows from England do not usually play well in America. And that is just a fact. Yeah. BBC America never has reality shows. And that's because they don't play well over here.
And also I would say like, especially in our super connected digital age nowadays, which is, I mean, even now that it's gone to Netflix and the gap between episodes is down to what, like 3 or 4 uh-huh. days?
Yes.
Like it's impossible to avoid finding things out because mm-hmm. people on the internet have no manners. But like, but if we're talking about, and that's like with a gap of 4 days. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about a reality program that aired several years prior to when it's on TV here, like, how do you not know everything about it?
Yeah, PBS would air it. PBS would literally get seasons 11 months after they'd aired in the UK when we would get it on our PBS stations. So season 6 aired in like, or actually a really great example is season 7, which was the last one on the BBC, aired from August to October of 2016. We saw that as season 4 from June to August of 2017. And by then it had already been off the air completely from the BBC for almost a year at that point. Everyone knew it had moved to Channel 4, and they knew that it was, and there was already discussion of whether or not the new Channel 4 episodes would even come to PBS or if they were going to go somewhere else, since Channel 4 had basically put it out to bid.
You were talking about that charity element at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They in the UK, they continue to do a charity thing with celebrities, and they do it for Stand Up to Cancer and things like that.
And so that's a throwback to what the show originally
right,
was.
Right.
And The celebrity editions never come over to Netflix. Like, no, they've never come over to PBS. The closest thing we will get to that is that last year's holiday specials, the holiday specials for 2019, which do come to Netflix 11 months late for reasons I don't understand, had the cast of the Derry Girls in it. And that will be airing this coming Friday.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yay! That's coming this coming Friday to Netflix along with the New Year's special.
Because I love me a Northern Irish accent.
I'm very excited because I only discovered Derry Girls like in the past. I discovered it was one of my like lockdown watches and I love it.
Oh, okay.
And I love all the girls in the show and I just, mm-hmm. it's gonna be so good.
Yeah. So the thing is that most people, when they discovered The Great British Baking Show, discovered the PBS version when it was at its height of popularity on BBC One, when the history thing was at its smallest, when Sue and Mel were at their most powerful, when Paul Hollywood had basically become a massive celebrity, like on par with Mary Berry. I mean, honestly, season seven.
I have thoughts that I'll get to on that in a minute.
Season seven, when it aired in 2016 over there, the premiere actually drew a higher audience than the opening to the Olympics.
I believe that.
You should mention that they changed out most of the cast.
Well, okay, that's the thing, is that because The Great British Bake Off commanded such a huge audience, Love Productions, which owns the show, went to the BBC and said, well, if you want us to keep it on the BBC for the next season, you need to give us £25 million. And BBC said, austerity? That's like the entire operating budget of BBC Four? No, like we can't do that. And Love Productions was like, well, you can just get the government to give you that money. And BBC was like, you are insane. No. So Love Productions basically said, okay, fine. Our bluff has been called. We'll just, who wants to pay £25 million for The Great British Baking Show? And Channel 4 stepped up and paid £25 million for The Great British Baking Show, not realizing that the BBC had done all the staffing. Sue and Mel and Mary and Paul were all contracted through the BBC and not through Love Productions. They did not have a contract. So when the show moved to Channel 4, they were not part of that £25 million. They did not come with the money. Channel 4 literally paid £25 million for an empty tent. And Sue and Mel, you know, were like, they work for the BBC in so many other capacities. They have other shows there. They do hosting. Mel is the host for Eurovision every year. Like, they were just like, no, we're not going to go break our contracts and make enemies of our major employer by going to Channel 4. What is wrong with you? And Mary Berry, too, was like, I find this appalling. Why would you? This isn't, capitalism should not enter into this. The BBC nurtured this show and created it. I am not leaving. And so Paul Hollywood was the only one crass enough to take the money and run. That's actually why the cast changed over. That's why all the ones with the new cast, with Prue, who came from a...
Which is pretty much all of the new, now that it's a Netflix original set.
Yeah, if it says a Netflix original, it is one of the ones from Channel 4, basically. Because mm-hmm. Channel 4 desperately needed to defray the cost of having paid £25 million for an empty tent. And, you know, the fact is that, like, Prue is not a bad replacement for Mary. I like Prue. She was part of the Great British
Menu.
I
don't know about that.
Honestly, like, I didn't feel like that was a bad choice at all.
I think the thing we have to talk about when it comes to Prue is that the reason that Mary Berry works so well as a judge is that she is so unfailingly nice.
Yes, it is,
like,
true.
Like, even if she is hating your bake, she is nice about it. Prue is not nice. Prue is actually, like, this season wasn't as bad as last season, I don't think, but it was because I feel like Prue kind of faded into the background, except for her weird eyewear choices a lot this season. Like, her two critiques were either like, I love the flavor, or this is dry. But like, she's mean. Like, she's mean in a way that Mary never was. And this will get into my larger issue with what I think went wrong with this season, is that she is a really bad foil for Paul.
She is a very I will agree with that.
I think she's blunt, not mean. I think she just doesn't sugarcoat things or whatever. I just think she's more blunt in her judging. I don't know.
So Prue, I agree very much that Prue is not a good foil for Paul. And I think that actually extends to the entire cast at this point.
I think I said that I wrote this already. If anybody's read it, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. If you haven't, go read it, because I think it's pretty good.
I did read it.
I think they could really just chuck this entire judging/host panel in the bin and start over, and the show would be better for it.
I would absolutely agree. Noel was one of the Noel Fielding. They brought him on because he's a comedian, a very popular comedian, and he's considered hot by British standards. I don't think he's hot.
Wait,
first of
like hot?
Yeah,
like
Noel. Yeah, like really,
like hot like popular or hot like pot?
Hot. Yeah.
Wait, what did I? What?
I'm going to say right now that I am a Noel fan, and okay. I was very happy that he got on the show. And
I had
were
like legit never heard of him before this.
Yeah, well,
so.
I've seen him live. He did a North American tour probably about 6 years ago, and I went to see him with my son in Boston, my son Ross. Hey, Ross. and it was one of the best live things I've ever seen.
Do you think he's hot, though? Because this has really like broken my brain.
In a weird way, yes, I do. It's hard to describe. I can't describe it.
He's just like every college friend I had who went through a goth phase. I just don't understand it. It's like, ooh, I had a roommate that used to make chainmail for fun, and I feel like that's Noel.
So the original person they paired Noel with was Sandy, and Sandy was a very good foil for Paul. She took no guff from him. She clearly did not care what he thought of her, and to the point where actually she began to challenge him. And last season, I don't know if everybody remembers, but Paul didn't do a Hollywood handshake, and she felt that a handshake was warranted. So she then stepped up and did a little Sandy thing, which I have to believe probably had something to do with the fact that she is not back this season, that she had challenged him a little too hard in that one. But we will see her back because the holiday specials are 11 months behind. We will see her back for the Dairy Girls episode. So I'm very excited about that. Because
I did
think,
like Sandy.
I think losing Sandy was a major blow to them. I love Matt Lucas. I am on record as loving Matt Lucas. I thought he was great in Doctor Who. I think that when it comes to being consoling to the contestants when they're having breakdowns, that he does a lovely job. I honestly thought that his little speech at the end of the finale, where he thanked not only the production crew but the people who cleaned the tent, was just, I mean, that really got to me. Like, I was so, nobody ever recognizes those people, and he made a point of doing that. And that's the good stuff about Matt Lucas. The bad stuff is that he and Noel do not put any kind of check on each other whatsoever. They encourage each other, in fact, and to the point where I felt like it was a detriment.
Yeah,
I didn't like them as a duo. I didn't, because I felt
they're
like
too similar, I think.
Yeah. I feel like they both have that surreal kind of sense of humor. I just kept seeing him doing things. It's like, yeah, that sounds like something from Little Britain.
Yeah, that's 100% right. Like the weird part where he had like a mango on his head, like a paper mache mango on his head. I was like, this is so not funny.
Right. You need to pretend like there's an adult in the room.
And like Annie, I myself also love Matt Lucas. I loved him on Doctor Who. I thought he was hilarious on Little Britain. I thought he was completely like wrong for this season. And somehow, which is funny considering I don't think there's like a, you know, I don't think this is like a the same sort of male energy, but the fact that there's now three dudes in the tent to one woman. Is it, see, listeners, I can be feminist and lady focused on any show. But now that there's like literally one woman in the tent to balance like three dudes, the energy is really weird and off for me.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. I felt like there was way too much boy energy. I felt like Matt and Noel were basically distractions. Towards the end of the season, when they would come over to sort of interact with the bakers, you could actually see the bakers sort of like stiffen.
Like, leave me alone.
Yeah, like you aren't. The host should never be a detriment. They should always be supportive.
You know, and, you know what they felt like to me? They feel like, you know, when you're in school and the teacher says, like, if everybody just does this one project, like you can go out to recess early or whatever, but you can't go out to recess because there's two kids in the back that are throwing like spitballs at each other and just like wilding. And they are those kids.
Yep, they are those kids.
Well, I wondered, I wondered about that too, because it was obvious that for some people they really were distracting them, and you know, certain people more than others. And I feel like sometimes that's just, you know, if your humor, like Noel's humor, is to just come out with something off topic or surreal, and I think his idea is, I'm going to make you forget about your stress. I'm going to get you out of that moment where you're freaking out with this kind of weird thing. Well, that's not going to work for everybody. So,
oh my God, you know, it would make me more stressed. Like, yeah. I would be like, ah, because the camera's like up in your face. So you can't tell them to just like expletive off like you probably want to.
Right. I felt like everybody seemed a little bit more stressed. And, you know, it could be the whole bubble thing. It could be that they had to make the show faster. I just wonder if people were under more stress. So
That brings me to my next point, which is that this show, the reason that the Great British Baking Show, Great British Bake Off, is such a nice, gentle show is because how they treat their contestants. Most American reality shows are filmed in a bubble much like this one. Everyone is thrown into, when I first started recapping the Great British Baking Show, I was also recapping, say, Project Runway at the same time. Everyone is thrown into a hotel together, three to a room. You are never given a chance to have a moment alone. Literally every challenge happens the next morning. There is no time to rest. When two of your people go home, that one person gets thrown in with other people. Like, you never get a room to yourself. Half the people who go home on shows like that go home because they simply cannot function as an extrovert 24/7, 365, and they collapse. The thing about the Great British Bake Off is that it's filmed over a series of 10 weekends. Because the country is so small, everyone literally leaves on Sunday, goes home, practices in their home kitchen, sleeps in their own bed, hangs out with their family for the week, gets to make, like, you know, little forms and things they can use on the challenge the next week. And then they come back on Friday, they film for 2 days, and then they go home again. So they always have downtime to rest. Now, obviously the pandemic made that impossible, right? What they had was a bubble. And because they didn't start filming in April the way that they usually they film beginning of April through to June, and the tea party happens in June, they couldn't do that. Instead, they did it in a 5-week span from mid-July to mid-August, which also meant that the heat was a massive issue this year. So we have doing more than one challenge a week. We have nobody getting to go home and see their families until they get eliminated. And if you notice in the finale, all the eliminated contestants were not there, because they went home to their families. It's not like they got to stay. The only people who were there for the finale were the production team. This is a completely different mindset, and it really sort of showed the cracks and how, you know, the fact of the matter is the show has changed since it went to Channel 4.
Although I will say because I've heard this rant before, and I will let you do it for the people. But before that, I think we should at least acknowledge that, as much as I too did not think this season was the show at its, you know, at its best, it's honestly a miracle they made a season of this season at all.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, so I think they do deserve props for finding a way to make the show happen, for keeping it relatively the same, even though you are right, a lot of cracks in the way that in the format and the judging, there were a bunch of pieces that did not work for me this season. I do think tip of the hat to them for because there's plenty of shows that did that aren't going to run a season this year and that didn't even try. So,
oh yes,
mm-hmm. Thanks for making this season so I can snark on it is really what I'm saying.
I mean, honestly,
also
like,
fire Paul Hollywood.
Honestly, like, I felt like several of the people who went home early, especially like Sura, were the kind of people who would have lasted longer had they had the ability to go home and recharge every week.
Oh, wait, was she the one who walked her cat? Because I love her.
She was the one who walked her cat. She was lovely. But the way she, especially the way she fell apart when she went home, it really sort of felt like that felt to me much more like the kind of elimination I was used to seeing on a show like Project Runway than I was on a show like The Great British Bake Off. And that's just, and you know, it's not their fault. The pandemic made it this way. They couldn't.
A little bit of it is their fault, though, because I will say that I think some of the early round challenges were ridiculous.
They were.
Like, what, that first one where they literally, I'm sorry, I will see that David Bowie cakehead in my nightmares for like the rest of my life.
And Freddie Mercury with no neck.
Honestly, that is the exact thing. The challenges have changed since the show moved to Channel 4. They have made them much harder. They have made them much more brutal. They are looking much more for a nailed it type moment or a train wreck type showstopper. And I feel like considering all the changes that had to be made for the pandemic, they should have reconsidered. And they didn't. Instead, they did that bus challenge right out the gate. And
that was ridiculous.
Right. That should have been later.
And we don't get there's an after show that plays in the UK that we don't get over here called Great British Bake Off, an Extra Slice, where Joe Brand does like a little comedy panel and the eliminated contestant of the week comes on and like, you know, gets a little cake and a little, you know, and a lot of cheer. The guy who made Mark, who made that David Bowie bust, he brought the David Bowie bust that he meant to make to an Extra Slice and showed.
Did it remotely look like David Bowie?
It looked like David Bowie. It was the results were night and day when he could make that, not under the pressure of a tent on the first week. It really was. It was remarkably better.
I don't know if any of you followed David Bowie's son on Twitter, but he has seen the cake and
bless him. He was very nice about it.
He was quite kind about it, but I was rolling. Yes
Duncan.
He went to the same college as my daughter. He went to the College of Worcester in Ohio.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah, but on the subject of the challenges, like, yeah, these early showstoppers were like insanely ridiculous. And also the technical this season is a joke. Like, it's so hard. Like,
the technicals have always been hard, but the thing is that.
But it's hard and also ridiculous because it's hard in terms of difficulty, but they're like, this task is difficult, but you're also going to have to make this thing that you've never heard of or eaten. Or that anyone else has eaten. That cornucopia thing, I just cannot.
Mm-hmm. I would like to back up a bit because the technicals in those early seasons were historical bakes. They were part of the history part of this show when they first started. And they've really sort of gotten away from that since. And the only part that they've kept is the you've never heard of this.
Right.
Whereas it used to be you've never heard of this because no one's made it since the 1700s. Now it's you've never heard of this because, Jesus Christ, why would anyone make that?
I'm like, who even wants to eat that cornucopia thing? That looks horrible.
The technicals also had issues this season. Like, let's discuss the bagels.
Oh, Lord.
The rainbow colored bagels, which were supposed to be a thing for the NHS to celebrate the first responders in England.
I have no idea how to make a bagel. Like, I feel like regular people don't know how to do that.
No, regular people don't know how to make bagels, but that's not the point. The point is that, you know, something like that is actually very controversial. In England, the fact
making
that
making a bagel,
no rainbow, the rainbow,
oh, the NHS
assigning
thing.
The
right,
assigning
right, right.
The rainbow color to the NHS, which is something the government has done in a way to sort of the LGBT community feels that it is very much a slap in the face, taking it away from them, trying to reassign it to something else, and. So to have them basically make rainbow colored bagels without in any way thinking about the politics of how this would look, not just in England, but over here when it played on Netflix, where
I'm not shocked that nobody considered that because I don't expect TV people to consider that. But I do expect them, like, if they're again, all credit to making the show during a pandemic and to coming up with ways to make it happen and to not have to change it too much. But like. If you know it's going to be 100 degrees outside,
don't do chocolate
or ice cream. Like,
yes.
It's cruel.
Yes.
It's cruel to be like, here, make an ice cream cake when you have zero chance of your cake not melting. Mm-hmm. Like that is something that they could. I know it probably would have sucked to change it on the fly and they probably had all these things planned out for months or whatever. But like that is something they had control over and they didn't do anything.
Right. Like, it's one thing, like, the Baked Alaska famous bin gate moment that happened in their season 5, our season 1, with Ian throwing away his Baked Alaska because it melted. That was a freak hot day in April, right? And again, there's an entire week between. There's no, like, they had it set for weeks. There was, it suddenly, you know, and here it is on the second day of filming and suddenly it's blazing hot and no one knows what to do. And that's the first time it's really happened to, that's also the first time it really happened on the show that they wound up with a hot day since they record most of the, since they record in April and May when it's still relatively cool in the UK.
And also his ice cream was taken out of the freezer by Diana. So it wasn't just that it was too hot.
There was a whole like backstory to that. Whereas this, everybody is in the bubble. They are only get like a day off in between. You have the weather report in front of you, and you know that tomorrow is going to probably be the third hottest day in the UK in history. Because that actually was.
I definitely feel like that is the time to make an ice cream cake.
That is the time to go, you know what?
Outside.
Let's switch the ice cream cake with whatever we were going to do next week, right? Like, that's the time to make those, like, last-minute judgment calls. And they didn't. And it was very frustrating to watch.
Well, and the thing is that the show didn't even really acknowledge it in the sense that, like, it didn't really acknowledge it beyond Paul being like, well, it's hot. I hope they use their freezers appropriately. And I'm like, what are they supposed to do if it's 100 degrees and you have told them to make a cake out of ice cream?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. Matt Lucas did point out during the judging, you know, this is the third hottest day in history, which it actually gave me the date for it because it was a big deal that it was the third hottest day in the UK ever in history.
Climate change.
Yeah. I mean, if you know that you are filming in July and August and you know that climate change is here and you know that it's probably going to be hot, maybe think about doing the ice cream cake next season.
Or not at all.
Right. Like, speaking of which, we should talk about, we have not talked about the contestants this season.
Yeah, sorry, I got distracted.
No, it's fine. Like, because, again, I think this is also a bit of a problem with the season, is that if we were to talk about, like, what season 3 for us, which was season 6 for them, the first thing we'd all be talking about is Nadia. Right? Because Nadia, like, blew everyone's mind and was, like, the success story of the year. And she dominated. And Sue and Mel and Mary and Paul took a back seat to that. Whereas this season, as much as I am perfectly happy to see Peter have won, most of the contestants were sort of secondary to the drama of Noel and Matt and Prue and Paul.
I would say that I think I'm happy Peter won because I think he was the best, consistently the best baker. So I'm happy about that. I also didn't feel like there was a ton of tension in whether or not he was going to win because there were very few people that I think could have beaten him. But I don't think the show was very good about hiding the fact that, I mean, I know that, like, Peter is like the youngest winner in Bake Off history. He, like, grew up being a fan of the show. So there's some nice, like, self-referential, like, fangirling in both directions about this. But the show, in this instance, I specifically mean Paul, did not hide the fact that he was their favorite and they wanted him to win very well.
Yes, that is true. And the deference that Prue and the hosts showed to Paul in that preference was extremely frustrating.
This was, you know, let me just get it out now so I can stop obliquely referring to it. Like, my biggest problem with this season is Paul. Yeah. I think that Paul has become, I hate the handshake. Sorry, Carmen.
I don't care. About the handshake, I would say, remember when he got so much, you know, everybody was complaining that he was giving out too many? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was last season or the season before.
It was season 9, and it was sort of it was part of the move to Channel 4 to try to be nicer as they were being as the challenges got meaner. He tried to be nicer by handing out handshakes.
He's
more.
Not good at that.
So then they were saying these handshakes aren't worth anything because he's giving out more than one an episode. Mm-hmm. So I think now he's pulled it back and given out fewer of them.
I hate the handshake just on, like, a sort of larger level because. And I don't know if it's because it's become more obvious to me with Prue as his co-judge instead of Mary, because I feel like everybody still was kind of competing for praise from Mary because she's Mary Berry.
Yeah.
Prue does not have an equivalent, like, sign of approval, and nobody cares what Prue thinks. And it's obvious. It's obvious that Paul's opinion is the only one that anyone cares about or solicits. And it has made It has made the entire judging process like Paul and some other people, and I hate it.
They, if you notice, Matt Lucas attempted to do a rather crude one with Prue and her moaning when she ate food.
Oh my God. Could there just have been fewer dirty jokes this season as well? Like, good Lord. I know I'm like, I'm not a prude, I promise, but I was just like, oh my God.
Well, to be fair, Sue and Mel had a lot of innuendo.
Yes, they did, to the point where there was a need to pull it back. And, you know, if you remember in the I don't know if American fans were really quite aware of this, but there were several seasons where we had a squirrel who had very large nuts, let's say.
There were a lot of those jokes this season as well.
Yeah. Right. And like that was when Sue and Mel were asked to tone it down, the squirrel was removed from the opening. So there was a whole little move to sort of tone that down.
I mean, because we're all grown-ups here. But back to Paul. Sorry, yeah. I derailed it with that. But I do think that you are correct. I think the deference to Paul's opinion has become a problem, because I think it's very clear that unless Paul likes you, you're not going anywhere in this competition. And if Paul does like you, you're going to stick around longer than maybe you should otherwise.
You know, I felt so bad for Laura. You know, Twitter beat the crap out of her when she got in the final over Ermine this season. And she didn't, I want to state that that is absolutely unfair. She doesn't deserve it. She's not the one putting herself through. The person you should beat up for putting someone through longer than they should be there are the judges, and specifically Paul. Paul was very unfair for her to put her through to the finale, where she basically crashed and burned. And that's totally on Paul.
And they acknowledged from like the opening of the episode that there was no way she was going to win.
Right, right.
Like it was just, I felt bad for her.
Yeah, I mean, because I think that's why she kind of pulled herself up a little bit in the showstopper, because she knew she wasn't going to win, so the pressure was off, you know.
Well, that was also like her MO for the whole season, is this like she had disaster after disaster in the first two rounds, and then even if her showstopper looked horrible, it tasted great. Yeah. So she just kept skating by, and she seems like a lovely person. I'm sure I would have a great time hanging out with her, but she had no business being getting as far in the season as she got.
But I just want to make sure that we understand that's not her fault.
Like, oh, no, no, not at all. No. Like she can only do what she can do. And I applaud her for like clearly, you know, I'm sure she's handled a lot of what I'm sure is disgusting internet hate with grace. And I wish that people were better than that. They're not. But I just, you know, I think Paul liked her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened.
Yes, that is exactly what happened. It's not the first time that's happened either. Our season two, which was their season four, had Ruby, who was another one that Paul really loved, to the point where
like
I don't
Ruby.
Even remember Ruby. Maybe I didn't watch that season.
The tabloids actually like made up rumors that she was sleeping with Paul, and that's how she got all the way to the finale. Right? Like Lord. It was bad. Okay, so you know at least it wasn't that bad this season. That it wasn't. It only got ugly towards the end when Ermine went home. But yeah, like I feel very much that when Paul favors someone and he pushes them, there is no one to push back anymore. And that is incredibly frustrating.
Or even the opposite way, when he really doesn't like someone, there's no one to champion them because everybody appears to be afraid to gainsay Paul.
Right. Like I feel like Mac, who went home Mac Patel, the one who went home the second week instead of Rowan, like I felt like he really could have stayed a couple more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And Prue was just like, well, I guess he bores me because she really didn't know, because she didn't want to push back. Yeah.
Well, and I always find it's harder at the beginning because you don't know everybody very well. They haven't had that many chances. It's so horrible to be the first person or the second person that has to go, because maybe your thing that you're better at is coming up later and you didn't get a chance to get there. That's just, you know, that's the nature of it. But
does anybody else feel like they kept Rowan because they thought he was good TV?
Yes,
like
absolutely.
He was adorable. And I loved that little tidbit at the end where they're like, Rowan has learned to make his own waistcoats. And I'm like, yes. I love that for him, but I also feel like he should have been the first person out, and he made it to like the third episode because I don't know. They thought he was good TV, or like, did he actually complete any challenge prior to?
Nope. Not once.
Not in the way that he said he was going to. No, he always, he was too ambitious.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like the waistcoat thing, my first thought is, what, are you going to put him on the Great British Sewing Bee? I mean, like, speaking of which, PBS, Great British Sewing Bee, bring it over, please. Thank you. I will beat that drum until someone actually does it. Anyway, so the thing is, though, like, I just... The final three were so, it was so obvious that Peter was supposed to win. And yet at the end, when he did win, he was so gracious about it. And it was so very clear that it wasn't just that, like, Paul liked him, but the actual production really liked him. Like, that cheer that went up was a genuine cheer. And that's
like such a sweet kid.
Right?
He really does.
Yeah.
And like the way the production, honestly, like the production people, as much as they keep them, you know, back in the bubble, like we don't really see them until the end. Like that spontaneous applause when the three of them finished that final showstopper, like that hit me right in the heart. And that was when I suddenly went, okay, you know what? I have been angry at this show for weeks and it's going to win again. And it's going to do the thing it really needs to do, which is make me feel good.
And so sweet of them because, you know, his family couldn't be there. You know, he was calling his brother and his parents to say he won. Nobody's ever had to do that before. So,
yeah,
it was nice. And I'm sure they felt, you know, that there was a family feeling because everybody was, you know, there together. But at the same time, this is the first time my daughter and son-in-law had ever watched the show. And we made it a habit of getting together on the weekend and watching.
Aww.
And having dinner together. And it was really nice.
The bake-off and bringing families together.
Yes, very much so. And my son-in-law, he'd never seen it. And so I was explaining some of the usual things. And I said, oh, at the end, they usually have everybody come back and, you know, everything. And I said, and this show is really nice because when people are struggling, the bakers help one another. And it's not that there was none of that, but I felt like there was a lot less of that than I'd seen in previous seasons.
Absolutely.
I didn't know if that was just me or I was misremembering.
No, I would 100% agree with you. And part of that is lack of practice time, the people who have enough practice time and really have their timing down will finish early and then they can turn and say, oh my gosh, you're struggling. Let me grab that for you. And
because
that's one of the things about the Great British Baking Show that changed the face of reality television was that kind of attitude of it's not about who wins. It's about producing the best bakes you can possibly do. Mm-hmm. And that is actually something that has now spread to other television shows. Like you saw it on Sci-Fi's Face Off. You see it somewhat in The Voice now. You don't see it on American Idol still. Sorry, guys. But there's other shows that have come since then. Like my husband loves the show Forged in Fire, where they basically make knives and swords. And when someone finishes,
that good? That feels like it's right in my lane.
My husband loves it. And it is a feel good show in that same way. If someone finishes their knife early and they look over and they see their neighbor struggling to finish the handle, they're like, hey, I'll do this for you if you need to do that. And like that kind of attitude of it's about the product that we're putting out. It's not about the competition is mm-hmm. really like it's part of what makes the Great British Bake Off the Great British Bake Off. And we didn't have that this season again, partly because of the pandemic. And that's what I mean when I say there were cracks that showed.
Right.
I mean, which is unfortunate because I think this cast probably spent the most time together out of any of them. I loved at the end when they had all these clips of them like hanging out with each other's families and like doing stuff together, like in
my
a way
heart.
That I had. I know.
And Dave's baby. I just, that was like this, like seeing him, like I actually teared up seeing him lying there with his newborn. Like I was,
I
just
know
like,
that montage did a lot of work.
Yeah, it really did.
And at the end, when they showed Louis Troyo, he had been one of my favorites in the past. And
his season was the first one I ever watched.
Yeah, that was such a good season. It had Chetna, and he was in the final, and he was one of my favorites. And when they did one of those Stand Up for Cancer specials, he had commented on Twitter that he had just been diagnosed with cancer. And I had breast cancer the year before. And so I kind of reached out to him on Twitter and, you know, we didn't have a conversation. But it was, you know, he was always so kind on Twitter. He was very responsive to the fans. And, you know, I just, it made me very sad. But that was nice that they recognized him at the end.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that despite what this show has been through, the show has like a nice long history at this point, which it can dip into and which it should dip into more often. One of the other really moving moments that I had that happened for me was when Peter started talking about how season three, our PBS season five, which on Netflix is Great British Baking Show's The Beginning Season One. He started talking about how that was the first season he'd ever watched, and they started playing old clips of like the things he remembered from that season, and I was like, more of that too.
Yeah.
You should do that. You should use your own history to your advantage instead of
it did
something
make me
like
feel a little old in the sense that like Peter's like, I'm a child who grew up watching this show. Now I'm winning it, and I'm like, I am more of the ancient one. It is great. So it sounds like we all did. Okay, round the table. How do you feel about Peter's win? Did you think Peter would win? And if you had a favorite who was not Peter, who was it?
Let Carmen
go first. She's
no,
the guest.
I kind of suspected he was going to win, and I'm happy with that. And not only was he the youngest, he's also the first Scottish winner. Although.
Woo!
No Scottish accent to speak of, but anyway, that's all right. I thought, you know, overall.
Yeah, but he made like a bread Edinburgh, so.
Yes, he did. He was very into Scottish things and flavors and all that, but he didn't, it's like, are you sure you're from Edinburgh? I don't know. But my favorite, who didn't make it into the final, but I think he was like everybody's favorite as far as like personality, he seemed to be a favorite amongst the bakers, was Mark L., and I was sad when he left in Japanese week. He was the Northern Irish guy. I loved his accent. His hair was a wonder.
Oh, right. He made the avocado things. He made the little avocado people.
Right. But when he left, it seemed like everybody was like truly sad about it. You know, it was, you know, there have been times and seasons in the past where people cry and, you know, you can just tell they're really, really sad that person's leaving. And he seemed to be like really the only person that everybody was sad that he was leaving. But he was just my favorite personality. He was, you know, he was a middling baker. I mean, he was right there always in the middle. He had some really good things. He had some things that didn't work, but he was my favorite person that was on the show.
If I had to say, I mean, it was very obvious to me from the beginning that Peter was going to make the top three, and probably if Paul had his druthers win.
On Survivor, they call that a winner's edit.
Ah, that would be very correct. Yes, Peter had the winner's edit from the very top. My favorite was Ermine. I thought she was amazing. I mean, her first bust was a disaster, but the fabric on that thing was gorgeous.
I know, if you just like if you just like cut its head off, it would be fun, because that face was like so horrible.
Did she make Lupita?
Yes. Which I honestly, I question whether she's ever seen Lupita, but.
But, you know, when she wasn't being asked to do ludicrous things, she actually did some amazing work. I thought her bakes were some of the most beautiful of the season. And I was very disappointed that she was not allowed to make the final, because she would have threatened Peter. Because honestly, I feel like Peter's win would have felt more like he'd actually beaten someone, that rather than just sort of step over Laura and Dave. As much as Dave did a very good job in the finale, the real problem with Dave is that he was just utterly forgettable, and like people would be like, so who's left? And I would name off like, well, Laura's still there, and Ermine's still there, and Peter's still there, and some other Dave. Right? Like, he was just forgettable.
I just kept saying about Dave, it's like, he would surprise me, because it's like he just doesn't seem like the type of guy who's mm-hmm. going to be like a really good baker. And so when he did well, it was always like, oh, that's surprising.
I always thought it was interesting that he had such a thing for like chili flavors and weird, like not, you know, your standard white guy kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. I didn't want to eat half the stuff that he made, because the flavors, quite frankly, sounded disgusting. But I'm like, you do you, my man.
I mean, that was, to me, that was probably the most frustrating part of the season, was that I felt like she should have made the finale, and I'm sorry that she didn't, and I'm sorry that Paul didn't see fit to give her a second chance just because she fell down, considering how well she'd done all season.
I actually, That's, I mean, I think she would have made for a more interesting finale than Laura did, as much as I enjoyed her personality. But I also just remember being annoyed that for that dumb Japanese week where they had the showstopper, where they had to make the cute animals.
And she just didn't do it.
She did. She made a beautiful cake.
But she was just like, screw you.
Like, that had not, that was like nothing. I don't even know that anybody mentioned it. Like,
oh no, they did.
Prue said she didn't follow the brief.
Yeah, Prue was just like, "This is a lovely cake, and it has nothing to do with what we asked for."
It was beautiful, but I was just really annoyed that she just didn't even not even remotely close.
Yeah.
I think for me that Peter did get. I watch a lot of American reality TV, and the winner's edit is real, especially if it's a show that's not like Big Brother. Well, even Big Brother does it to an extent because they do have episodes that aren't live, but like Survivor and stuff, like the winner's edit is a real thing. Like, you can see how the people that make the show are like crafting a narrative out of these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought right from the beginning, Peter did get the winner's edit, but I also thought he was super talented, so I was fine with it. Like, half of his bakes were like gluten free, which again, I don't want to eat that, but I assume that it is much more difficult to make an amazing creation with like not real flour.
Yeah. He was basically playing the game on hard mode by doing that. And yeah, I appreciated that too.
So I think he totally earned it. My favorite, and neither of you will probably be surprised by this, my favorite was Lottie.
Oh, I liked Lottie.
I loved Lottie.
Lottie reminded me of myself, and I feel like I would really hang out with her and be like, we would be best friends. So Lottie, if you're listening, send me a DM. Let's be besties. Like, she was just so like, everything about her personality spoke to me. I loved her so much.
The fact that she's a theater person, like, I don't know if you pay attention to what they do for a living, but she actually, her job is a pantomime producer. Like, that's what she does for a living.
That is my favorite fact about Lottie.
I know. And so, like, she gave some of the best gifts of the season, partly because she is so theatrical, right? Like, the Great British Bake Off Twitter account, which I used to decorate my post this season, loved using images of her being theatrical all over the tent even after she left. Like, every week there were Lottie gifts every week.
I mean, you're not gonna get those gifts from Dave. Because I also thought she was like, she also really got like screwed by Ice Cream Week, like,
yeah,
which made
did.
Me angry.
That
was her cassette tape, which I thought was an incredible idea, but it just melted because it was so hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, congrats, Peter. Gosh, this conversation has gone very quickly. I guess that's good. Does anybody have any final bake-off thoughts before we wrap it up?
Oh, I wanted to say one other thing in defense of Noel Fielding.
You're like, he's a hot goth, okay?
And this is the thing that I found out later. His partner, Liliana Bird, I believe her name is, they were having she was pregnant with their second child, and she was due.
Wait, I'm sorry. Noel has children?
He has two.
Mine is blown.
He has two daughters now. And the first one was born a couple years ago. This one, she was pregnant, and she was in the tent, and, you know, she was in the bubble. The wife, the girlfriend, and she thanked on Twitter, she thanked everybody for, you know, looking after her, for helping everyone so much, and that she was due 4 days after they finished filming. So if he was a little scattered, perhaps it was because he was concerned about the birth of his child.
Fine. I did not know that. I just don't. His humor is not for me, is really what it is.
Yeah. Oh, well, he is not everyone's cup of tea.
I honestly was a little worried when they cast him because some of his Netflix specials, if you watch them, he has blackface stuff that he's done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a character from Mighty Boosh. Yeah.
Oh, wait. He was in that? I'm learning so much today.
He's the other half of the Mighty Boosh.
Yeah.
Who I also don't really think is that funny. So save that for the next Thanks, I Hate It.
I will note that, like, as part of the Black Lives Matter movement this summer, Netflix removed all blackface comedy from the British shows that it carries, including Noel's pieces. It didn't really make much of a blip on our radar over here because, we have a lot bigger problems to talk about than Netflix removing a few episodes here and there. But I had always sort of wondered and been concerned that that would come up when they cast him and that there would be like that this would be a real problem for them. And it just never seemed to be.
No, this is right now. I was this many years old when I learned about this. Yeah. Right now at this moment.
Well, but talk about that. Matt Lucas, Little Britain could never be shown now.
It's just
too offensive.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another problem is that both of them kind of traffic in that humor that is rapidly being left behind by the social mm-hmm. changes in our world. And I think that putting them together was just not the right move. I don't know what they'll do next year. Maybe they'll just tell them to tone it down and hope. Maybe they'll just hope that next year's vaccine coming, fingers crossed, that they can do a full season next year and it's less fraught than this one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or at least closer to normal.
Yeah. We'll see. But if anything, my final thoughts about the series is that I want to see how next year looks because I am concerned about what I saw this season in the tent leads, and I would like to see the show move a little bit back to contestant forward drama mm-hmm. rather than the
Freddie
host.
Mercury head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what the biggest drama was when at the very beginning when Sura hit Dave's cakes and they fell on the floor. We didn't mention that.
Yeah, we didn't. But again, that kind of stuff just got overshadowed. Yeah. You know, we sort of forgot about that.
Years ago, that would have been like the A plot.
Right.
Yeah.
And instead it was sort of a, oh, oops. OK, well, no, it's all right. Paul and Prue will just taste the ones that are left and they'll just judge and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that, again, it's really very much moved away from making the contestants the stars in quite the same way. And I'm not liking that.
Yeah.
Wait, has everybody besides me given their final thought already? I've only had one cup of coffee.
Oh, I it was fun for me this year because I watched it with people who'd never watched it before. We kind of made an event out of it. But yeah, I kept having to explain, well, this isn't the way this usually goes, or this isn't the way. So yeah, but of course, you know, give allowances for the fact that it was during a pandemic and, you know, the conditions were different.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I guess my final thought is two-pronged. One is I'm glad that they made a season. I'm grateful that in a time when people need a show like this, they managed to put one out there. I just wish it were a little more like the show that I feel like we needed instead of the show that we got, which I think Andy's mostly covered a lot of what was wrong with this season from the bakes that seemed sort of meant to embarrass the contestants rather than celebrate their abilities, and that made me uncomfortable, and I think the deference to Paul is a problem, and I think just the chemistry of the lead quartet is not in a great place right now, and I don't enjoy watching them together because it feels like Paul and some other people are talking. Occasionally, I mean, like, seriously, this season Noel was the person who pushed back against Paul the most. Noel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just don't, like, this isn't the Paul Hollywood bake-off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I know that a lot of people are probably going to be mad at me for saying stuff like this because, you know, he is the last real tether to the old bake-off. But
I don't think he serves it. I don't think he serves the show well.
No, I don't either. I don't think the way that his role has evolved is good for the show.
Yeah, his opinion shouldn't be as weighted.
Yes.
Because they keep saying, well, this is, you know, it's only this week and this is the way we have to look at this. And it's like, well, maybe you need to look at things differently, you know, weigh things differently than you have in the past.
Yeah, because there was just too much of this season that was uncomfortable. And that's not what I need from the show. If I want to watch people being awkward and uncomfortable, there's like 15 other reality shows I can watch for that. And I don't know. But as always, I enjoyed it. I think the correct person won. And that is at least something.
Yes.
So yeah, and in the end that does cover a multitude of sins.
I mean, honestly, that montage at the end did a lot of work too.
Yeah. And when the right person wins and you do and you can feel good about it even if it didn't get there the best way possible. Yeah, I think that in a way that kind of saved the show in a way. If the wrong person had won, it would have been a disaster, but they didn't let that happen.
So good job there. Well done, Bake Off. All right. I think that is our show. Carmen, thank you so much for joining us to talk about bread and pastry and stuff.
Well, I love to do that. And in fact, I didn't mention this before, but I said I have an Anglophile group at the library where I work, and we do our own version of the bake-off. We have for the past 6 years, and because I have some really keen bakers in my group. And this year we had to do it virtually, and I asked them to do a fall-themed bake, and some of them did spooky things. They did eyes coming out of pies, and somebody did a bonfire night cake, and somebody else did, oh, it was like a tombstone made out of Rice Krispie treat, and they had maggots and a skull made out of white chocolate. I mean, they went all out. And then we had these really nice, you know, just cheesecake with apples and, you know, caramel sauce. But it was lovely.
That
and
sounds
they
yummy. I made stuffing from a box last night. So there's that.
I know. I'm always in awe whenever they make these things.
I love Stovetop. I'm not ashamed. Stovetop is great.
But anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I kind of have a tie to it because we try to put on our own version. So it's fun.
That's so cute. Okay. So tell everyone where they can find you and your Anglophile group with their bake-off contest on the internet.
Well, you can we have a Facebook page. It's called MCDL Anglophiles United. So if you want to look at that page and look at our bakes, they're on that page. And I'm also on Twitter at BritTelly. Addict. Brit Telly Addict. That's it.
I was going to be like, that's not your Twitter name, but you got it in the end.
Yeah, I got it. I'm like, what is it? And of course, like, I write things and they show up on television. So
it's very early, like I said. Yeah. Annie, you're up. Where are you on the internet?
You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find my cat pictures at Annie Bundle on Instagram. Let's see. I am a staff writer at Elite Daily, where I am currently covering things like The Mandalorian, and I will be covering Bridgerton later this later next month. Let's see. Here I write for Televisions. You may have heard of it. I cover a lot of things, including His Dark Materials and other fun television shows, and I will be recapping the Dairy Girls episode, so keep an eye out for that. And then, yeah, I also freelance around the web, and you can I just retweet all my bylines, so be my friend on Twitter, and that way you'll just know what I wrote this week.
Dun, dun. She's making like the cutest face right now after she said that. It was really cute. Who am I? I am Lacey MB. That is me on Twitter. LACYMB. And I also write here at Televisions and a bunch of other places around the entertainment web. But I always tweet my bylines. So be my friend. Listen to me shout into the void. If you just want the cat pictures, you can go and follow the boys on Instagram at Baker and Hammer. They're very cute. They turned 4 months old this week and are small terrors. I love them so much. Anyway, whew, it's so early. I need another cup of coffee. Yes, that's right. Televisions is brought to you by WETA. And if you like what we do, you can visit televisions.org and click on the donate button to help us keep doing it and support public media in the process. You can follow the pod and the site at tele_visions on Twitter and Televisions blog, all one word, on Facebook. What else do I normally say in the spiel? That's right. You could leave us some ratings and reviews on the podcast app of your choice. And if you have thoughts on the greatness or deterioration of the bake-off, email them to us at televisions@weta.org. I think that's all that we have in this slightly supersized episode this week. So thanks for listening with us. And as always, take care, wear a mask, dump hand sanitizer everywhere, keep social distance from people. We're heading into the end of the year. I know we're all tired of this. It's been a long 2020, but the light at the end of the tunnel is coming. So let's make sure we all get there together. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.